Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
It's gone. All gone.
What's gone?
Well, the snow.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Nope, they stacked it up in my yard. It's still about two. There's still a.
Well, that's as you live about 3 feet below pickle level. You know, in my yard, it's gone.
Actually,
last week, we were talking about snow and telling about all the adventures we had in it. And this week, nope, melting away because it hit 72 today.
I drove by the Eden Prairie Mall. And, you know, at malls, they just take all the snow and stack it in one part of the parking lot. Oh, it's still there. It's still, you know, like twice as tall as a human being. It'll be, there was one year where I remember it was there till June. Because we'd got so much snow, they'd stacked it up so high.
They do that in Duluth. In fact, they're usually like mid-August, it finally melts away. Because it gets that black layer of grit on top of it, and it won't go away. So... But yeah, no, I actually have a yard. I see grass. All we need is a little rain to get rid of the sand that we tend to put on top of all the ice, and then a little thunderstorm to get a little nitrates in the air and let everything start growing.
Well, it's pretty soon I'll be able to go hiking again.
Yeah, and then it'll snow next week. So.
Well, yeah, because I will cause that.
Yes.
But last week we were talking about the TV shows, the superhero TV shows. And by the time this episode comes out, the Avengers movie has dropped.
Yep.
And do you have your tickets yet?
My wife bought tickets for me and my daughters. We're going Friday night.
And she is not going, correct?
Nope, she is going.
Oh, really? I thought, you know, she bought tickets for you and the daughters, so it's like, good, it's a night there. I don't have to put up with these jerks.
What was that? She's in the other room yelling, so suck it.
So suck it, Strode. You don't get to go with us.
Yeah, suck it, Strode. We abandon you, and we're going to eat pie just to spite you.
There's not that really. Sad music again.
Usually I have pretzels, so don't.
I'm going to wait and see it on Free Comic Book Day, I think.
Yeah. I want to see it quick because, I mean, you figure it's, what, 10 years culmination of all the Marvel films?
And isn't it, like, 3 hours long? I've heard it's 3 hours long.
I have no idea.
A three-hour tour.
I plan not to drink a lot of anything. But I do definitely want to see it because I know there's always going to be some asshole. Oh, I can't believe that Thanos killed the... Pepper Potts, you know, it's like, whatever, dude, just shut up.
I can't believe that Thanos killed Rick Grimes.
Yeah.
And Batman.
And Mickey showed up and saved the day. Mickey? Yeah, that mouse guy.
Well, one character we know will be won't be killed in the movie is Ant-Man, because he's got a movie that comes out right after.
You could follow the Vegas odd makers. I mean, they figure... The odds are good on Iron Man, Captain America, and Thor dying. Especially after the last movie of Thor, which my wife finally watched, Thor Ragnarok. So, and much she greatly appreciated Chris walking around without a shirt on for a while. And yeah, all that stuff. So, but and then, of course, there's the odd makers. They're like, okay, Spider-Man, Ant-Man, Doctor Strange, Black Panther, not even on the list because they have movies coming out.
That's
so.
Right.
And I'm like, really? This is what you're betting on? That's right. I suppose WrestleMania is over. Baseball's just starting. And, you know, I think basketball. Is basketball going on? I don't even know.
Yeah, they're in the playoffs. The Timberwolves. The Minnesota Timberwolves are in the playoffs.
I think they're out already.
Damn it.
By the time this airs. Yeah.
But, and when we get to geeking, I'll be talking about how we get WrestleMania Part 2 over the weekend. Ooh. But we promised the people a few things, Joe.
We did.
The first thing we promised them, you asked, at what point will this podcast catch up with Amazing Spider-Man, which hits issue 800 very soon? So I did the math.
He's a math maker.
And when we hit episode 950, and if Amazing Spider-Man stays monthly, we will catch up with Amazing Spider-Man. So
I thought it was cats up.
950. And if they go bi-monthly, we'll catch
which
up.
Which they'll probably do.
Well, then we'll catch up with episode 1150.
So we got that going for us.
So you need to, you know, get healthy, go to the gym, take care of yourself.
Who's this gym guy you keep telling me about?
He's a guy who will help you get healthy.
Ah. So I take it Pop-Tarts and Kool-Aid is not, oh, this is not the way to get healthy!
Well, it depends. What are you putting in the Kool-Aid to make it sweet?
Nothing. I want aspartame.
Ah, then, you know, that's better than sugar.
Ah, honey, honey. Ah.
But the second thing.
Second. There's more than one. Are you talking about MSP Comic-Con 2018? May 18th? I'm sorry, May 19th and 20th. 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds in the grandest stand of them all, the grandstand. And you can go to mcbacomiccons.com and get advanced tickets right now and all the information and the guests and things like that.
No, that's not what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. That was a sidebar, I guess.
Ah. No, we talked a couple weeks ago about how Marvel was having their collections and trade paperbacks being sold on Comicsology and Amazon at 99 cents the week of release.
Bah!
They have stopped that practice.
Quack, quack, quack.
So, we will probably never know the story behind it, but it has stopped for now.
Yeah.
It could come back at any time.
Probably. Are you out of your blanking mind?
You never know.
You don't.
You just never know. So, the last thing to follow up on that I can remember, because Lord knows, we've done 352 of these damn things. We probably have like 5,000 things that we said that we would talk about and never got around to.
Yep.
You know, we'd know if somebody would put together a Wikipedia page, but no.
You
slackers have not made a Wikipedia page, and that upsets me because we are a national treasure.
To be sold off to pay off the national debt.
I don't think we'll get that much.
Yeah, that's true.
I really don't think we'd even be able to pay for one of Trump's gold toilets if they sold us. But we said that we would talk about our five favorite superheroes / comic book related movies this week. So go ahead, tell me what your twist is, tell me how you're going to muck with the formula, tell me how you're going to take this idea and twist it to your own evil ways. Go ahead, Joe.
It's the same thing as last week. So for those of you who have the podcast, go ahead and listen to it last week. And in the meantime, you know, we'll just let Strode try to figure it out.
I didn't listen to last week's podcast.
Yeah, I didn't either. I was here. No, for me, it was the top five movies that absolutely wowed me, knocked my socks off, made me go, oh, sweet bejesus, they got it right. And number one is the 1989 film, I'm Batman. Of course, Tim Burton did it. It was the debut of Michael Keaton as Bruce Wayne / Batman and Jack Nicholson as Joker. There was a lot of other key players, Kim Basinger, Robert Wool, Pat Hingle, Billy Dee Williams, and they never followed up with him, unfortunately. Because, you know, we're all like, oh, that's, what's his name, Dent?
Harvey
Dent. He's going to be Two-Face. No, isn't he? He's just like the Last Jedi. They're going to show him no love. He's just gone. And the sheer awesomeness of the movie was, you know, it starts out in the opening scenes very cool because up until then, everybody was worried about campy Batman. And, you know, we talked about our love of the Batman TV show, but really in the 70s and 80s, media was locked into this bam, pow, biff. Anytime they talked about comics or comic book movies, they had to go reach back and be so, oh, original, and just use those cool sound effects from the Batman TV show. Well, by the time they got to the Batman movie, they took they took it away. We had known Batman had been a serious character since Neil Adams got a hold of him in the 70s, but it's just public consciousness never caught up with that. And this movie, I think, single-handedly turned the brain trust to the fact that, hey, Batman's not a campy character. He's could be serious. You know, there were some light moments in it, but it was very much influenced by Alan Moore, Brian Bolan, Frank Miller, the work that they did on Batman. And it was a critical success, a financial success. It was outstanding to see it in the theater. I mean, everybody, you know, and again, this is something, you know, I listen to people piss and moan about, oh my God, I can't believe they made Doctor Who a woman. Oh my God, I can't believe they made Lost in Space without Bill Murray. Oh my God, you know, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing Discovery before Kirk and new Spock. And no, dude, we listen to everybody piss and moan when Michael Keaton was called in to be Batman. What? Mr. Mom is going to be Batman?
It's directed by the guy who did Pee-wee Herman's movie.
Oh, and you know, it turned out awesome. Matter of fact, people by the time this movie series was done were going, oh, I want Michael Keaton back. And if you're really looking for, I mean, first of all, this kind of set the theme for the Batman movies where the villains pretty much steal the show. And if the only complaint I really have is towards the end, there's a couple dumbass scenes where, you know, Batman's trying hard to take out the Joker with his guns and apparently misses, but, you know, Joker can pull out a big-ass wazoo gun and just shoot the thing out of the sky. Although Jack Nicholson did play kind of a surprise. Just a phenomenal movie. It just wowed me to no end. It showed that, yes, you can have a serious Batman. Not a tremendous amount of CGI involved. And, you know, it gave an awesome Batmobile. The Batwing was cool. And, you know, it took a long time till Heath Ledger to people to get Jack Nicholson out of their mind. And, yeah, I'm kind of ignoring Mark Hamill doing Joker on the animated show. But, again, the animated show didn't have quite the wide appeal that Batman had. And, of course, Corey knows. That's not even worth a dime. Who did all the music for Batman?
Oingo Boingo.
And?
No, Danny Elfman, the guy from Oingo Boingo. And he did the soundtrack, but Prince threw in a bunch of new songs.
Yeah, and it was
actually... we have talked in the past about how I knew that before everybody else on the planet.
There was actually a single album that was all Prince songs. And it was just fantastic. Money, money, money. So that's number one on my list.
My first movie is also a Batman movie, but it's a different one.
Batman.
And I'm just going with my five favorites, and that is The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight holds up. I remember when the Batman franchise had kind of run itself into the ground, and it needed to be reinvented. And this was before everything was getting rebooted all the time. So that when Batman Begins came out, it was kind of, oh, okay, whatever. I didn't even rush to go see it. I saw it to like a couple of weeks later when I heard that it was okay. And Batman Begins blew me away. It was excellent. It was what I wanted in a Batman movie. You know, the Tim Burton Batman, while it was, you know, light years ahead of what people expected, when you go back and watch it now, there's still parts that are kind of goofy. You go back, you watch Batman Begins, and there's nothing goofy in it. It's very well done. But Dark Knight was an excellent movie. Take out the fact that it's Batman, and it's still a phenomenal movie. It's one that I could watch over and over and over and never get tired of. And in a lot of ways, other than the Batman animated series, this is my favorite version of Batman. I remember when it came out, I was working at a movie theater, and even us employees weren't able to see it for a week or two because it was sold out all the time. It was always sold out. So that when I did finally see it, it was on like a Saturday afternoon early show, And still the theater was packed. There was an energy to that movie that I haven't seen in another movie in a long time. And I recently picked up the Blu-ray of all three of the Christopher Nolan Batman movies. So I'm excited to see them on Blu-ray and all the extras and all the special stuff. And now I have a digital copy, too. Ooh. Joe?
The next one that wowed me to the point of I felt like my 12-year-old self picking up that first Spider-Man comic was the Spider-Man 2002 film that Sam Raimi. He directed it. It was Tobey Maguire as Peter Parker and the Kirsten Dunst as Mary Jane Watson. Oh, my. I didn't even mind William Dafoe's goofy Norm Osborn costume. You know, really, you take a guy like William Dafoe, who is amazing. Willem, I guess.
You're being correct.
I am. But and what do? You put him in a Power Ranger Green Goblin mask. I mean, come on. Really, other than that, what wowed me on this one was the fact that now CGI had finally caught up and we actually could see Spider-Man flying through the air in New York. I mean, we saw I'll jump forward to Spider-Man 2 a little bit because that was an awesome movie, too. One of my favorite scenes was just in the trailer where they kind of go from the ground floor and then you catch Dr. Octopus as he's climbing a building and you zoom all the way up and there's Spider-Man on top of the building and you get kind of a scale to just how these guys do it, which comics don't always cover. But you with the Spider-Man 2002 film, it was like everything we've been waiting for. All these years we've been promised Spider-Man. And it just never happened. It never materialized. You know, we had that goofy TV show in the 70s that just didn't work. And finally, it was there. What I didn't like about the film, of course, is, and probably because the way Maguire looked, is they kind of blew over all the high school stuff and just got him into adulthood right away. But it still worked out pretty good. And, you know, just I could watch the scenes of him swinging through New York over and over. The scene where when Green Goblin attacks and everybody's screaming and he's just standing there looking up like getting ready to go. And the fight scenes were amazing. Spider-Man 2 built up on it. I don't think they ever did a Spider-Man 3. But it was just an amazing film, a realization of what I've always wanted to see since I was a kid. And, you know, again, I like the current Spider-Man. I never did watch the reboot. I've never seen those. And I heard they're okay. It's just and maybe I'll watch them eventually one of these days. But the first one for me was always has a special place because it finally could see Spider-Man swinging through the New York skyline. And even when I was there, you know, I mean, it's a geek thing when you're in New York and you're thinking – you just kind of look up and like, yeah, I could see this happening. Although really, for as fast as he swings through the air, he'd cover Manhattan in about 5 minutes. So, and of course, there is the infamous scene that once you've seen, you can never unsee. Corey, do you know what I'm talking about?
The Spider-Man kissing Mary Jane upside down in the rain?
Nope. Worse.
I don't know.
When Spider-Man saves Mary Jane the first time and is swinging off into him, there's a scene where she is holding on to him and just kind of looks at him. It's not Toby. It's a dummy. She's holding a dummy. And it was as many times as you see that, you will never unsee it now that I ruined it for you. It's just one of those scenes. That it's like that in American Sniper. They didn't use a real baby. They used a baby doll as he's sitting there holding his kid. It's like, no, that scene just doesn't work. So other than, you know, Willem Dafoe was awesome. It did a good setup for the future. I actually bought Rosemary Harris as Aunt May, even though I do like the younger, hotter Aunt May. And, of course, Cliff Robertson. It was the origin story that, thank God, we'll never have to see redone because, you know, face it, Uncle Ben, you're just not long for this world. You're a great rice, but you're a lousy uncle.
Hey, Joe.
Yes.
What's brown and crawls up your leg?
Tarantula?
Uncle Ben's Perverted Rice. I miss
okay. Crickets. I do, too. I was waiting for them, and they just weren't there. Corey, what's your next film?
The next movie I have on my list is one of the Marvel movies. There have been a lot of Marvel movies, and I enjoy all of them. Yes, all of them. Even Ant-Man. But the one that I've enjoyed the most so far is Captain America Civil War. It showed that you can have a whole bunch of characters and still have a compelling story. It actually, I like the setup in this one better than I did the comic book version of Civil War, because it wasn't as bullshit. And the characters all had reasons for what they did. And, you know, so many exciting things happened. Black Panther showed up. Spider-Man showed up. Giant Man showed up. It was like a comic book come to life. It was incredibly well done, very tense, and very tight. There weren't any scenes where you were just kind of sitting back going, oh, I'm so tired of this exposition. Can we just move on? Nope. I remember when we saw it, it was one of those movies where you come out when it wraps up and you go, wait a minute, it can't be over yet. Oh, wow, we've been here for 2.5 hours. Just a perfect roller coaster action movie with a lot of heart and a lot of plot behind what was going on, too. It wasn't just a mindless slugfest. There were ideas in this film. And out of all the Marvel movies, it's my favorite. Joe?
Even though Zemo's plan was incredibly convoluted, and if any one thing would have changed, it never would have happened. And that's one of those things where, you know, you don't grab a roller coaster and pick it apart. You know? And that really, if you start looking at the whole thing with Zemo's plan, it was such a coincidence that everything fell together. Did not care, though, when I saw the movie. Fantastic. I didn't choose that one, though. I had a tough time trying to figure out which ones to do. I didn't know if I wanted to do the first Iron Man, because, again, a movie that just, wow, this is so cool. And, of course, when Nick Fury shows up at the end and wants to talk about the
Avengers Initiative.
You know, every fanboy in the theater went, I went with Guardians of the Galaxy, though, the first one. Another movie, similar like what you're saying. It just starts off fun. It's goofy. I almost hear the 70s music playing in my head. Hey, ho, what you want? And he's kicking those dumbass things across the planet. It was fun. I loved watching Dave Bautista. Because, you know, we watch him as a pro wrestler, but to see him actually acting was a lot of fun. And, you know, everything went together well. I enjoyed the second one almost as much as the first one. And it's one of those movies that, as I'm watching it, you almost hate to see it end, because I genuinely like these characters. I could handle like a 5-hour movie with these guys just sitting around as Rocket Raccoon trying to grab. I need that guy's leg. No, just because I need his leg. And, you know, it's just one of those things where you love the characters mesh. They go together well. And I could just, you know, 2.5 hours is long enough. Let's do a 4-hour movie. And it wowed me. I mean, it showed that, yeah, a Marvel movie doesn't have to be grim and gritty. Like, you know, Civil War, you know, they always have their little moments, but it was a pretty serious movie with some serious repercussions on it. Thor Ragnarok was in a similar vein to Guardians of the Galaxy, just kind of lighthearted. But it had its serious moments. And I just, for Guardians of the Galaxy, it was just awesome. I mean, I hope they just let these guys have a 7-movie deal and just keep going with it. And the fact that they're in the upcoming of Avengers movie, I mean, it's like, oh, we're going to see them sooner than later. So, plus the Easter eggs were just fun. You know, Howard the Duck at the end. And I didn't even pick on Howard the Duck because I love Leia Thompson. You know, but anyways. That's my pick. What do you got next, Corey?
The next movie is probably one of my favorite movies of all time, and that is Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. This was not a comic that I read before I heard about the movie. because it was being published in little trade paperbacks from Oni Press, and it was getting, you know, it was American manga, and it wasn't in my wheelhouse. It wasn't something where I'd heard that, you know, I would like it. So when they announced the movie and the people involved, it was, oh, okay, well, this could be interesting. I might as well read the comic. And I loved the comic. I devoured that thing. And I think the last one came out, like, right before the movie. Because I know when they were filming the movie, they had to ask the creator, how does the story end? Because he hadn't completed the ending yet. But Scott Pilgrim vs. the World is very much a comic book on the screen. It's a love affair to the comic. It's a love affair to video games. Beautifully filmed. So much fun to watch. And, like, you know, a lot of movies that are very, you know, big on Flash, they don't age well. I recently saw it. It was on cable while I was at the group home, and I recently watched it. And it holds up perfectly. It's still fun. It may be one of the best, you know, teenage movies of the last 20 years, even without the comic book connection. The characters are all bright and exciting and interesting. The humor is very well done. You could see, you know, I've seen it a whole bunch of times. I still laugh at the punchlines. I still love the jokes. I have so much fun watching this movie. And I think that's one of the things about when you talked about Guardians of the Galaxy. I saw Scott Pilgrim in the theater a few times because it was just such a fun ride to watch. And still, every so often, if I don't want to watch the whole movie, I'll pull up one of the different fights and watch that on YouTube. So I love Scott Pilgrim. Absolutely love that movie. Joe?
This next one I had to think about because I wasn't quite sure if I wanted to consider it a superhero movie. Is it a fantasy movie? Is it a Star Wars movie? I had to go with the original Star Wars before New Hope, before remade, before Blu-ray, what I saw in the theater as a 12-year-old kid. And this to me was, again, I just started reading comics. One of the comics I actually bought and read before I saw the movie was Star Wars number 4, I believe it is.
Yeah, when I think all six parts were out before the movie came out.
Yeah, and my cousin was like, don't read it, and I read it. And, you know, I have the comic in 2.0 condition because, you know, I bought it up at Ely, Minnesota at an actual comic book newsstand, which, you know, is they don't even exist anymore. And so I slabbed it mostly for the sentimental reasons. But, boy, I remember seeing the first ads for Star Wars thinking, meh. And then I started seeing stills for it. And it was kind of like, this is kind of cool. You got a human and this big fuzzy thing. And those are obviously robots. And I'm not sure what this Vader thing is.
Have you gone back and watched the original trailer?
Yeah, I have.
It is terrible.
Oh, the 70s trailers were terrible.
But I watched the trailer recently because I don't remember ever seeing a trailer for it. And I watched it and it's like, that would have kept me away from the theater.
I'm pretty sure I didn't see it because I didn't really get to see a lot of movies unless I did it on my own. But Star Wars, again, I probably saw it a couple weeks in and everybody was raving about it. And oh my God, that first hit, that first note, blew me out of my seats, and I was just wowed. I mean, we'd never seen anything like this on the screen before. You know, science fiction up until then was kind of, how would you say, like Logan's Run, Soylent Green, 2001, The Space Cluster, just
yeah, the
real
Planet of the Apes movies and stuff like that.
Yeah, and what they did is they cut the budget on every sequel. They didn't do that in Star Wars. If anything, they increased it, and we couldn't wait for the next movie. And it was just so mind-blowing. The villains, the heroes, you know, you had Princess Leia, Carrie Fisher, you know, was hot. And Han Solo, he shot first because he was the rascal of the group. That instantly made him the badass of the group, the fact that he blew Greedo away. And, you know, I know Lucas wants to recon it for whatever weird brain cells are rubbing together in his head, but damn it, that's not the Star Wars. That told us right away Han Solo was the cool kid. He's the one all of us wanted to be as 12-year-old kids. Yeah, Mark Hamill got the funky thing, and he got to kiss his sister. No, it wasn't his sister. He got to kiss the princess at the time. Later was coming. Peter Cushing was just, evil. And Vader was just weird. I mean, you look at some of the things in that movie, and you wonder, how did Grand Moff Tarkin get to be? He commanded Vader to do shit. Nobody commanded Vader after that. You know, there's things that don't hold up pretty well. I mean, just how badass was Princess Leia? Yeah, she just watched her whole planet blow up. And Vader's, meanwhile, Luke's like, oh, man, I watched, he died. It's like, oh, my God, there's just, but it didn't matter because it was just incredible. Everything was big. It was bigger than life. I can't rave enough about it because even now, just thinking about the original one and, you know, I guess that's why I get so flummoxed about people bitching about Star Wars now. You know, oh, man, I don't like it now. It's like, it's your choice. No Star Wars or this. And there's so much more to that universe. I trust Disney to franchise it. I'm looking forward to the Solo film. Yeah, there's always something you can pick at. Jar Jar, midichlorians. But, you know, there's so much more that they could do with it. And I'm just happy. Here I am. I mean, good Lord, 77, 87, 97, 2007, 2000. We're over 40 years, and I'm still gawking about this particular movie. And to me, it really captured, you know, we're talking superhero movies, but man, there are a lot of superhero stuffs in there. I mean, Vader's a really badass guy at the time. And, you know, Luke got the fancy powers. He got to swing the cool lightsaber. You just had a little bit of everything in there. And, yeah, we ran around most of that winter and summer, you know. Well, even to this day, I can't walk through Target without picking up a tube of wrapping paper and fight! Which is why I'm not allowed in Target anymore. But so, I'm going to go with Star Wars for my fourth one there.
One of the things that I think is interesting that people nowadays – there's no comprehension of this, but they put out the comic as promotion for the movie because they were like, oh man, this is going to be hard. So maybe if we get these comic book people to think it's a comic book movie, they'll come.
Well, and people didn't even, the story is legendary that everybody passed on it. Even Fox was like, yeah, George, you keep the rights to it. We'll distribute it for you. Uh-huh.
The other thing, though, was the release. Now when a Star Wars movie comes out, it's in all the theaters and you can see it first week. I lived outside a town of 350 people. The closest movie theater was in Canton, Illinois, which was about 15 miles away. The movie came out, Memorial Day weekend?
Yeah.
It didn't come to Canton until the end of August. Because there weren't enough prints. The theaters were booked for other things. So you had to wait. And that's something that people don't understand anymore. Especially, you know, by the time you got to Empire Strikes Back, that wasn't happening anymore. But when a big movie came out, you had to wait. I remember my parents had to wait for months to go see The Godfather. Because it would play in the big cities, and then it would play in the medium cities, and then finally it would play in the smaller cities months later. In Peoria, it played in one theater for an entire year.
My daughters are so tired of me saying that. I said, you don't understand. To see Star Wars, you had one choice. Go to the theater. I saw Star Wars, I think, 6 times. I remember the news making it where one guy saw it one day. He saw it 100 days in a row. And after that, the theater just let him in for free, mainly because he's probably buying tons of popcorn and stuff. But, nowadays it's like, well, if I don't see it, it'll be streaming in a few weeks. It might be at Redbox. I mean, you know, I saw Thor Ragnarok when it came out, my wife finally, you know, she didn't want to see it, but then we finally got it off Redbox. You have so many more options. You don't have to wait. And that's assuming you're not into the, you know, pirate bullshit where you just download it. The other thing, if you really want to know the effect Star Wars had, go look on Netflix, look up the series The Toys That Made Us, and look at the first episode about Star Wars. They didn't have the toys ready, I believe, until an entire year after the movie came out.
Yeah.
And they still sold like crazy. The infamous promise envelope where you will get the first run production. And for, you know, people scoffed at that. But man, if you had that original tray, it was like those Lunchables where you peel off the thing and you get the toys out of it. That baby's a serious collector's item. The original envelope, unopened, unredeemed, it was an expensive collector item, and then somebody found a warehouse full of them, but the price has since crept up. All those early Star Wars things that came out, just go check the film out, and you'll see just how Kenner went from like a small toy company and just blew up overnight to an incredible, incredible toy company, and then they eventually got swallowed up for other things. But Star Wars was such a weird phenomena. I don't think it'll ever... I mean, there were big moments in Star Wars again. I mean, for comic readers, when Dark Horse decided to come out with Dark Jedi.
Dark Empire.
Oh, Empire, thank you. I mean, that sold like crazy. And then when Lucas redid the reimagined and on set first, I mean, everybody's like, oh, that's stupid. It's never going to make money. Lucas made another $1 billion on that. And now you see, oh, 40th anniversary of Grease, 40th anniversary of Ghostbusters. Let's re-release it in the theater. I mean, you remember the ad for that for a generation. They've only seen it this way. And they show the small screen as the X-Wing comes at you and it hits the screen and explodes. And it's like, come see it. And I remember taking Dana to go see it because she'd never seen it in the theater. And then, of course, when we were all excited for... What was the prequel movie? I can't even remember it. I just remember standing in line at Toys R Us just to try to get a set of the toys. And we were all excited for that. And then we met Jar Jar and Trade Federation. But it still got us excited for The Force Awakens. I mean, it was just something that kept going. I can't even think of a franchise that's that way. Or can I? Corey, what you got next?
The next movie is one that I think is, you know, I've talked about how Captain America Civil War was one of the most perfect Marvel movies, and Dark Knight was a great movie. I think Superman, the motion picture, the more I read about the behind-the-scenes stuff, the more I'm amazed that the movie is as good as it is. Because many of the people involved in making it were just... terrible, terrible people. The original script by Mario Puzo was thrown out and not used. They paid him a lot of money for that script. Didn't use it. The Salkinds, they filmed one and two together and then threw out most of what they had filmed for two. But you go back and you watch that movie, Christopher Reeve is Clark Kent and Superman. It is probably the best casting of any superhero movie. I recently read an interview with John Byrne where he said, I never saw a problem with the Clark Kent secret identity after I watched Christopher Reeve in Superman the Motion Picture. He made me understand how putting on the glasses and changing how you act can make you seem like a completely different person. There are campy moments in it. There are silly moments in it. But anytime Christopher Reeve is on that screen, that is a excellent knock your socks off movie. And to this day, I don't understand why that didn't kickstart kind of a superhero thing in movies. Because it was a huge financial hit. It was well done. It was loved by adults and kids. And it kind of always shows me that if you keep the heart of the character, people will love love the movie. The reason we don't like Man of Steel is because it's not the heart of the character. It's dark and it's gritty and it's Superman being told by Pa Kent that, no, you need to hide. People will hate you. No, Pa Kent's the one who said, look, you're here for a reason. You're here for a purpose. There's an aspect of hope to the movie. There's the romance, the lines. So many lines in that movie are eminently quotable. And how much of it is just because Christopher Reeve knew how to sell that movie. He knew how to sell the character. You watch it and you believe. I remember the trailer was, you will believe a man can fly. And coming out of that movie, you believe that Christopher Reeve is Superman. There was no other movie that he did. He was a great actor, and I've seen him in other films where he did a great job, but he was so good at Superman that that's all anybody ever wanted to see him as. Which, you know, kind of a curse. But hey, you know, you get four major motion pictures out of it, and you get paid more each time you show up. Yeah, you're going to cash that check. But Superman the Motion Picture, just a phenomenal movie that, and that was still during the era where if you mentioned Batman, people thought the TV series. Superman the Motion Pictures showed that, treat it seriously, people will go. People will like it. You don't have to camp it up. You don't have to be goofy about it. You don't have to treat it like it's a joke. Be reverent to the source material, and you'll get rewarded. Joe?
Speaking of franchises and sticking to the source material and just having a lot of fun and a fanboy's wet dream, I'm going with The Avengers, the 2012 film, which is apropos because we got the Infinity War right on top of us. Oh, man, this was just amazing. I mean, this is probably the last film, well, I suppose Guardians came afterwards, that I was like, oh, that was incredible. You almost hated to see the characters go their own way at the end because you just absolutely loved them. So up to this point, and correct me if I'm wrong. Okay, we had two Hulk movies. We had Iron Man, Captain America, and Thor, and then the Avengers, which was just brilliant. And the way it tied together, there were Easter eggs leading into each other. The advent of the, you know, you don't leave a Marvel movie until the very frickin' end because you're going to miss something. And just little seeds that go into other ones. I mean, there's people that did the timeline where they're talking about, like in Iron Man, when Phil goes off, yeah, we got something in southwestern New Mexico I got to deal with. That was Thor. There's where they talk about in Iron Man, at the time the movie was going on, Hulk was rampaging in his second movie in San Francisco. There's Easter eggs all over the place. You know, there's Captain America's shield being made. And this movie was just a wow movie. And was this one of the first we saw on?
Yes, it is. I still have my cup from when we saw it in St. Cloud because they had the special collector cup. And I'm goofy. I will buy that stuff. It's like, an extra dollar for a collector cup that just basically a piece of plastic with pictures on it? Fuck yeah! I bought that, and I bought the tin popcorn.
And what's amazing now is you've got everybody wants to make a franchise universe. The way Marvel Studios did, the way Disney's inherited it, and they're failing the one thing that made the movie work. The fact that every other movie, you know, be it they tried with the Hulk, Iron Man, Captain America, they're their own standalone type movies. You can go see a Thor movie and not necessarily care about what's going on in Avengers. You can see Doctor Strange. And why I don't know you'd ever want to not see the Avengers, you would. Black Panther's the same way. They all tie in, but they all stand alone. Civil War is almost – Captain America Civil War is almost like Avengers. Yeah. And this shows just the power of the Marvel movies. We've talked podcasts a long time ago about how – oh, I can't think of his name. Ari – Arvid?
Yeah.
He gave away the X-Men movie rights in order to prove to the owner of Marvel at the time, Ron Perlman, that, yes, we can make movies on this. And the X-Men movie was close to being on the list because, man, we were excited as hell for this. And it was a fun, good movie with its little bits, and all the characterization was good. But Avengers was done right. It was just all the pieces, they locked together. I've got friends right now that are going through all 12, if not more, Marvel movies, just waiting for Infinity War. But Avengers, I mean, as good as Avengers 2 was, and I may change my mind once we finally sit down and talk about Avenger War in a couple weeks. But for me right now, Avengers was the last movie I was just wowed with. It was so good, so perfect. I mean, I want to throttle Marvel. Why didn't you make a Black Widow movie? Why don't you take Jeremy Renner and make him a Hawkeye-level character with the Netflix guys? You know, I don't agree with the decision. Well, the movie and the S.H.I.E.L.D. and the whatever, they're all going to be kind of in their own little universes. We know, us fanboys know they're not. You know, they tried that with Vertigo, remember. We knew Vertigo was part of the DC universe, at least some of it was. You know, make the parts fit. You know, if Avengers doesn't have a cameo with all the Netflix characters somewhere in the movie, I think they're not doing themselves a solid. But I this is one of the movies I absolutely loved. It wowed me. It's the last one on my list that I'm going to babble on like an incoherent idiot. So let's jump over to Corey. What is the last one on your list?
The last one on my list is actually close to one of the ones on your list. Spider-Man 1 was great. Spider-Man 2 was phenomenal. They'd taken all the lessons they'd learned from the first Spider-Man movie and kicked it up a notch. They made it more interesting. In the first one, they captured Peter Parker and Spider-Man. And in the second one, it's like in the first one, they're kind of in second and third gear. And in the second one, they jammed it into fourth gear and hit the gas. It's still, you know, another one of those movies. If I'm passing by and it's on FX, I'm watching. For all of the crap Tobey Maguire got about before he was Spider-Man, oh, he's too small, he's a little kid. He was perfect as Spider-Man. And
see Michael Keaton's / Batman, you know, which is why people, it's called acting. Let them act.
Well, and don't hate on stuff before it comes out.
Yeah.
I don't even know what the latest movie is that people are hating before it comes out.
Solo. Star Wars Solo. People are just hating.
There's another one, too. And, you know, they were complaining about the casting. And all I do now is I just cut and paste the picture somebody put up from the Comic Buyer's Guide back in 1988 with, oh, I can't believe that Mr. Mom and Pee Wee Herman's director are making a Batman movie. It's gonna suck.
Or go look up that song, you know, Batman starring Adam West, which actually wasn't a knock. It was just a, will there be budget blockbuster, be a bat bomb? Well, Batfan cares that Batman is also Mr. Bomb. Tune in tomorrow to turn the rest. Although they should have let him have a cameo. Good Lord, you let Pee Wee Herman have a cameo.
Well, I think one of the problem was that Adam West was trying to pitch Dark Knight, saying it was his own idea.
It could be me. I would have made him Bruce Wayne's dad. Just
have him gunned down in the alley.
That'll teach ya.
I wanted to be Batman when I grew up. My parents got tired of me dragging him down dark alleys.
No, not today, Scory.
But Spider-Man 2, a lot of fun. And it showed that Spider-Man wasn't just a one-off, that they'd finally figured out the formula to making Marvel movies right. Because
and destroyed it with Spider-Man 3. Oh, sorry.
I don't hate Spider-Man 3 as much as other people. I think a lot of the problems with it was the crap that the studio said, hey, fit in Venom, fit in this, fit in this.
Yeah.
And a lot of superhero movies, when they get to their third and fourth, they're cramming in too many villains. It's like, okay, well, in the first one, we only had one villain. So in the second one, we need to have two. By the third one, we need to have nine. No.
Villain.
It's why I like the fact that Marvel, they're not letting that bloat happen. Where, okay, in this one, we've had one villain. Now we're in the fourth movie. Let's have an entire team of villains. Look back at the Avengers. The villain was Loki. Period. You know, he brought in the aliens and stuff, but it was Loki. That's it. That's all they needed.
And I think I talked about it because I was on the road at the time when I saw Avengers. And when we saw Thanos, I was like, oh. And everybody was with me, was a non-comic fan. What did I miss? I said, oh, I'll describe it later. But man, that was crazy.
And I really wish Sam Raimi would get pulled back into superhero movies. I think Marvel would do themselves a solid by having him direct something. And they kind of hinted at one movie they want to do. And the minute I heard it, it's like, oh, let Sam Raimi do it. Because they're talking about Nova.
Ooh.
And if they do Nova, of course, they're going to do the new young Nova. And he's, you know, he showed with Spider-Man. He can do young superheroes type stuff. So, now, not all of these movies are great, Joe.
No, they're definitely not.
Some of them, I'm looking at you, Steel, Catwoman, the Punisher movies, all three of them.
Sam.
The 1990 Captain America movie.
Howard the Duck.
Rat Finka Boo Boo.
But I picked one.
One to be the worst. One to rule them all.
I don't call it the worst. I was majorly disappointed with it. And the honor goes to Superman Returns. 2006 superhero movie. I almost feel bad for Brandon Roth, who played Clark Kent / Superman, because he did a really good Superman. The gist was is that for some ungodly reason, Superman went out into space for 5 years. And when he came back, that was the fun part of the movie. Because Superman's back. And no one believed it. You know, and the shots, like one guy takes a pot shot at Superman, just bounces off his eyeball, and we're like, ooh. But he was good, but the script was terrible. And again, I bought pretty much all the characters, including Kevin Spacey as Lex Luthor. But what really bothered me about it was at the end, they did not know how to end this movie. This wasn't I don't know if they were thinking that, okay, this is going to be a relaunch of Superman or just a coda to the Christopher Reeve 3 movies.
This was supposed to be a huge relaunch.
Okay, well, they failed miserably because the first thing is the movie ended kind of like, eh. You know, I'm looking at the movie time. It's like, okay, they got 20 minutes and they have Superman falling out of the sky after saving everybody, after being stabbed by Luthor with a kryptonite type sword. Or it wasn't, no, it was a sword. It was like a kryptonite shard.
Yeah, crystal.
And there were three things wrong with it. First of all, you don't bring a guy back and kill him off right away. Batman, Superman, I'm looking at you. And we never had the conclusion to Superman getting Luthor. I mean, even in the other ones, at the end of the movie, Luthor, in Gene Wilder's bald-headed glory, was in jail. In this case, he just kind of stabbed Superman. He dropped something I don't even remember what he was dropping it. If it was, he was doing that dumbass plan where he wants to, yeah, let's make more real estate by blowing up half the California. But Luthor just gets away scot-free. No, Superman should have showed up, and I'd been happy if he's getting ready to punch Luthor, and he just stopped and did the pink with his finky and grab him and drag him to jail. There was no, you know, again, maybe they were getting too clever for themselves thinking, okay, this will get people driving in for the second movie. But no, when they stop and they kind of drop the hint that, oh yeah, Superman basically banged Lois, left her pregnant, and she has a super baby now. Even though Lois, was she married to somebody else? Or just
yes, she was.
Yeah, so basically Superman finked another man's wife and now isn't paying child support on her super kid. And granted, the reveal that the kid was super was kind of cool, but, you know, we've gone round and round to this. You know, people say, okay, married characters don't work. Giving kids to a single superhero doesn't work. Incredibles, Fantastic Four, First Family. I'll buy that because the key is it's family. and you can work with it. But, you know, Superman with a kid, Batman with a kid, yeah, okay, the Super Sons series was kind of fun. But this was just wrong in so many ways. And, you know, did Lois put two and two together? Oh, yeah, Superman slept with me and I got his kid. I mean, it didn't seem like she did. You know, between the ending and they jammed in the death, you know, 10 minutes before the credits and, you know, Luther got away scot-free. And, you know, the thing with Kevin Spacey as Luther is he was not playing a friendly, jovial Luther. I mean, you could see Gene Hackman. He was a devious but kind of a goofy type Luther. You know, he just as soon cut a joke and then turn around and kill you the next time. But, yeah, this was just an evil Luther, and he should have been jailed by the end of the movie, at least bald, you know. And, yeah, no, they just kind of misfired on this. I know they launched into Man of Steel a number of years later. And, again, the guy I feel sorry for most is Brandon Routh because he was a good Superman, just not a good movie. And of all the movies, you know, and there are movies where we sit down and we go, oh, that was bad. I was majorly disappointed in this because I was so excited for what it could have been. That's all I got to say about that. Corey?
The movie I think is the worst superhero movie is, and, you know, there were a lot that came out where you just went, oh, God, that's awful. But this was one that was high profile. It was, you know, they spent a lot of money promoting it. They had big money people in it. And it's un-fucking watchable. And that's Batman and Robin.
I to this day, I still have no idea why I enjoyed it so much the first time I saw it. It had to be because we were with our good buddy Nick. And we were just laughing our ass off. Because I will sit back and let you go, but I will second the motion. I've watched this with my kids, and I don't know what the F I was thinking.
I knew I was in trouble when in the opening sequence, I can't make heads or tails out of what the hell the fight is. How Batman and Robin are flying, and then all of a sudden, in the middle of the fight, a hockey game breaks out.
Bat nipples.
It's unwatchable. Arnold Schwarzenegger, who, you know, he could be a good musclehead. All he did in this was, you know, have terrible puns. Uma Thurman, who's a great actress, put me to sleep. This movie killed careers.
Did you hear just recently they're talking, apparently Schwarzenegger and who's Robin? Chris O'Donnell?
Yeah.
They never filmed together.
No.
Their scenes were filmed separate.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's subtle, but it shows now that you go back and try to look at it.
And I thought
George Clooney was a very personable Bruce Wayne. He looked like Bruce Wayne. He's the type of guy who should come out and women should be throwing their undies at him.
Oh, but if you watch it, you can tell he doesn't know how to act for the big screen yet because everything is smile. Head bob, head bob, smile, head bob,
smile,
head bob, head bob, head bob. If people would tell him how much they disliked the movie, he'd give their money back. When they said they were going to put this
movie,
when they said they were going to put this movie out with commentary, one of the things Clooney says, well, if they're going to do director's commentary, the entire commentary should be the director just saying through the whole film. I'm sorry.
I'm
so sorry. I went and saw this movie with my son, who, you know, enamored of all things Batman. And, you know, after that opening sequence, I just lean over and go, do we have to watch this whole thing? Yes, it's Batman. It's the most painful movie experience I've ever had because it's poorly filmed. It looks ugly. It just looks terrible. The movie just, it looks like they vomited color up on the screen. The plot makes no sense whatsoever. And when I bought, you know, the four movie set, you know, with all the extras and everything, and you kind of had to get Batman and Robin with it. My son, of course, you know, watched them all, and when he was, you know, like, I don't know, 20, 21. And he came out of his room after watching it on his computer and said, "I'm so sorry I made you watch that." He has yet to apologize for the Spice Girls movie, but he apologized for that. And I've told this story a few times on the podcast, but DC, you know, for all the Batman movies, they would ramp up because they made phenomenal amounts of money with the first one. The second one they did okay with. The third one they did okay with. But they're finalizing all their plans. Okay, we're going to have Poison Ivy here. We're going to have Mr. Freeze here. We're going to have these specials. We're going to have trade paperbacks. So they had a special screening for the people at DC. And this was back when Denny O'Neill was in charge of the Batman books. So they have the screening, they show the movie, and when the lights come up, Denny O'Neill turns to all the people working on Batman and says, "We're fucked. We have tied our next year into this movie, and we're just fucked. People are going to hate this movie. They're not going to want anything to do with it." And he was right. The Poison Ivy stuff that they came out with didn't sell. The Mr. Freeze stuff they came out with didn't sell. You know, the Batman comic sold well because it was Batman at the time. But they got away from the tie-ins as quick as they could. The movie is unwatchable. It's ugly. It's poorly filmed. And Jesse Ventura yelled at me about it.
What did he say?
Well, remember when he had his radio show?
Yeah.
There was one time I called in, and I wasn't being a jerk. I just called in and said, "What was it like working on the set? Did you guys know that the movie was a mess and wasn't going to do well? Was there any indication while they were filming it?" He took personal affront to it. "What do you mean? What do you mean it was terrible? What do you mean it was a bomb?" "Well, it didn't make its money back, and it killed the Batman franchise." "That doesn't mean it was a bad movie." He was personally offended that anyone would say that the movie was bad. And me, I just wanted a story because I imagine, you know, they're looking at the script and they're doing the movie and they're looking at the dailies going, "God, this is a mess." But nope, they all thought it was a hit, I guess. You know who does put out a hit week after week after week, Joe?
Wait. Ah, I'm stumped.
These guys, our sponsors. That's right, here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, we have ads, and our first sponsor is me. That's right, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. I have my first book out with Dangerous Dan Moore. It's the first 100 strips of our online web strip, Worldwide News, the story of the lowest-rated cable news network. And you can get yourself a copy with commentary, with all sorts of extras, with signatures and everything. Just email Dan over at lordshadowflame@gmail.com. Our top sponsor, who's been with us since day one, is DreamHost. DreamHost.com. You need yourself a website, and DreamHost.com is the number one web host in the whole known universe. Just head over to DreamHost.com, put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, get $20 off your first year. How can you beat that? Our other sponsor is Graze, G-R-A-Z-E.com. Healthy snacks for a healthy lifestyle. Just head over to Graze, put in the code CORYS3R5P. Your first and fifth box are free. You can get them weekly. You can get them bi-weekly. You can get them monthly. You just order a whole bunch of them. It's great stuff to keep you away from the vending machine at work. Now, if you would like to leave a comment for any of the podcasts that we do, we'd love those. Go ahead and email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, or you can call 952-856-0519. Operators are standing by. Okay, it's just a place that we'll record your calls, but we'll play them on the air. We'll answer your questions. We love getting feedback. Tell us what you think. Ask a question. Suggest a topic. Be a guest. Send us your stuff. solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. If you would like to advertise on any of the Solitaire Rose radio shows, you can. Just email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. Thanks. And they're not the only ones knocking it out of the park. You know who else is knocking it out of the park every week?
These guys are cool podcasters.
That's right. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network has all sorts of podcasts. We've got Scrabbling Across the West with Dave Cafell and his lovely bride, Stephanie. They travel across the country playing musical gigs, and at night they sit down to play Scrabble and talk about their day at scrabbling.solitairerose.com. There's Novelcast over at novels.solitairerose.com, where I take the novels that I've written and turn them into audio podcasts. Currently, we are doing a novel called Do the Job, which is a murder mystery set in the world of 1980s professional wrestling. Then, over at badadvice.solitairerose.com, me, Corey Strode, and Wolfie B. Bad, along with Dan Moore, give bad advice to people who send in questions. That's bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is growing. Be there! You think NBC will get mad I used that? And now that we've got all the plugs out of the way, we get to the most
important... Didn't study.
Now we're at the most important part of the show, Joe's favorite part of the show. It's where Corey talks about what he needs to throw away in the fridge.
Mm-hmm.
No. It's what's going on the eBays, Joe?
Well, as I said before, we're winding up for the MSP Comic-Con 2018, part of the charity booth stuff. I have been getting donations in, which is pretty cool. One guy I want to shout out, C Car Solar, who sells Hot Wheels, convention cars, collector sets, things like that. If you're interested, you can find him at C Car Solar on the toypeddler.com. You can contact him at ccarsolar@comcast.net, or you can even call me on his cell phone if you want. He every so often he opens up his garage and he kind of blows out his cars, because you know, as you're picking up stuff, he's just been doing it tends to build up. It probably never happened to you, Corey, but it happens. I actually emailed him ahead of time, and I'm looking through my bags of stuff, because Hot Wheels just came out with a set of, they call them their memorial cars, and this one, it's cool because it's all Alex Ross art. You got Alex Ross on a Superman car, there's Batman, they got Green Lantern, Wonder Woman, and then of course the JLA. And if you like Alex Ross art or you like the Hot Wheels, these are some solid collector items. And, of course, they're almost impossible to find, because as soon as they hit the hooks at your local stores, they're gone. So he put a set together for me. I also picked up the collector version of the Yellow Submarine, which had a little bit more detail, a little bit more heavy than your regular run. I mention this because he donated a huge box of stuff, and I've been going through it and just wowed by the generosity that he had. And this is the second year in a row he's donated stuff. And again, if you've got things you want to donate, be it a graphic novel stinker, or you happen to, you know, invest heavy on DVDs of Superman Returns and Batman and Robins, we'll take them at the charity booth auction and we'll donate them off. What does this have to do with eBay? Well, as things are selling, and they are, last five things I sold, there's a book from Aspen called Journey, J-I-R-N-I. I'm not quite sure what it's about, but they had a bunch of Only for One comics, and the source donated one that happened to be signed by J.T. Krull, one of the creators, and I put it on the eBays and sold it for the charity auction. Sold a couple Brave and Bolds, 100 pager, 112 and 116. They were in good to very good shape. Good readers. You know, I've talked in the past about how I read that. IDW, I had a set of the Doctor Who classics, the Seventh Doctor, 1 through 5, out of 2011. And out of the Shazam run that I was boasting about, I've actually sold a couple of those. I sold a Shazam 16, which was the 100 pager. Came out in 74. It's only a good copy, so it went kind of cheap. I sold the Shazam.
I'm sure
I did that. Corey, what is significant about Shazam number 15, 1974, 100 pager?
Wasn't it the first 100 pager?
No.
Oh, then I don't know. I have not read that series.
It may have been, but no, this actually had Earth One Luther get zapped into a comic book, and he walks around totally befuddled on Earth S, looking at all the cartoon villains. And eventually he decides to go back, and he's relieved until Superman grabs him by the shoulder and arrests him. So this is classic Earth One stuff, bald-headed Luther. Kind of fun. It's a pricier book because of the weird crossover. And I had one that was just in very good shape, so sold it as a reader copy. I sold the Shazam number 25, which we've talked about before, because it's the first appearance of Isis. Mine was only in fine shape, so it didn't really go for the mint run, which is upwards in the $100 range. And the last one I sold was a good copy of Shazam number 30, which is the first time the entire Marvel family is in an actual story. We talked about Shazam 28 that had the first Bronze Age appearance of Black Adam. But he actually appears in one of the 100 pagers because they ran him one of his origin stories from the Golden Age. So that's actually kind of his kind of a interesting tidbit. Most of the other Shazams are there waiting for you to go, and I'm always adding stuff. Stuff will be disappearing, though, because as I get ready to get closer to FallCon, I'm going to start pulling this stuff out and bringing it to the charity booth. So if there's something you're interested in that you'd like to take a closer look at, give me a call. I'll bring it to the charity booth for you, and I'll donate everything to the two charities we're working with. If you just want to take it home for your own greedy self, and boy, I understand that. Make an offer. Let me know you listen to the show. I'll give you something fun. I'll ship it to you for free. Maybe I'll give you a twofer or something. I got tons of stuff to give away. I got a lot of comics to give. Oh, by the way, K-R-A-Y-Z. Crazy. That's where you'll find me.
Well, now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where I turn off the microphone and start playing old video games from the 70s.
Oh, that could be fun.
It's Freaking and Geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
Oh, I've just been achy. It's been kind of a busy day at work.
You worked today?
Well, I feel like I did. I'll get to the part of the work I did was in the geeking, but... I got a little ding in my truck's windshield. Happened during the snow last weekend. And I had the rider get it and for the windshield, so they'll come out and replace it for free. And I got up this morning, and I'm waiting for them, and then I realized, they're coming in on Tuesday. So I got to get up early tomorrow. On my allergy update, I went in. And I don't know what I covered the last time. If I cover everything about the grid test and the
yes.
The gallon of blood and the pee. Yeah. No, I haven't heard anything. Although work's now like, hey, what are you allergic to? Don't know. It probably wasn't work related. It just happened at work. So now I'm worried if they're going to say, well, you know, we're not going to pay for your ambulance ride. And I said, oh, that's good. Did you do it when Brad had a heart attack? And you know, all that fatty food you've been eating had nothing to do with work. We're not going to pay for it. So whatever, I'm insured. We'll figure it out. Other than that, not really freaking on too much. I'm going to revisit the freaking when I get to the geeking because there's some, you know, every so often you have something that you're geeking on, but there's a little freak attached to it. But we'll get to that in a minute. Corey, what are you freaking on?
Attached?
There is.
What's his name?
He passed away. Don't worry about it.
One of the DC miniseries that is out now that I was going to pick up as a trade paperback, Batman White Knight. Guess what, Joe?
What?
It's the start of a new DC imprint. DC has so many different imprints now that I've given up keeping track.
Yeah.
And it's a stupid idea. It's a stupid idea because the way mainstream comic fans buy their stuff is they want to buy books that, quote, matter, unquote. It doesn't matter if the book's good. It doesn't matter if they enjoy it. It's, does it matter? Does it have consequences? Does it tie in with the universe? Well, if they start doing all these books that have their own universes, eventually people don't care. I'm looking at New Universe, Marvel 2099, Ultimate Universe. What was it? Marvel UK. When you start splitting up your line into a whole bunch of little mini lines, no one cares. And sales drop. But DC seems to be going down that path, and I don't understand why. The other thing, Box Day is probably like late next week.
Mm-hmm.
Because, previews is going to be in, so we'll have all your books by Tuesday night. When are you going to mail them? Next Monday. And there are no omnibuses.
No omnibus?
Out of all the omnibuses I've ordered, none shipped in April. None. The closest thing to an omnibus was the third volume of the Planet of the Apes archives, which reprints the Marvel Black and White magazine. And the way they published that is really weird. It's like, okay, here's the serial that was a continuation after the last Planet of the Apes movie. That's all in one book. Now here are all the short stories in another book, and now here's all the adaptations in a third book. Rather than, okay, here's issues 1 through 10, here's 11 through 20, and here's 20 through the end of the run. So that's a little weird too, but no omnibuses. I'm sad.
And he has a hole in his wall. And wolves are after him.
Really? I thought it was just Wolfie after me, but I've been able to get rid of him with a note from the HR department. So that's really all I'm geeking on. Joe, I'm freaking on. Joe, what are you geeking on?
Oh, the new Lost in Space is amazing.
I've heard it's very good.
It is. When you're ready, just sit down and enjoy it. Because first of all, get the old one out of your brain. And just...
That won't be hard because I hate
the
old one.
I never watched the old one. I liked the book that Bill Mumy did at the very end where he finished the Innovation series. I haven't seen hide nor hair of it anywhere, so it obviously must be a collector's item. But that was the closest they ever came to actually having a serious Lost in Space. And I'm real excited about this one. And, Chris and I are deciding. She's still not sure about it because it was way more intense than she was led to believe. And I've got the one thing that I realize is missing is because they do have a family dynamics, but they don't have they have the dad, they have Will, the two sisters, and the mom, but they don't have the Major Matt. Or whatever his name, the other guy that was there.
Oh, okay.
I didn't really notice that until, I started thinking about it. It's like, well, they're missing somebody. Oh, yeah, that's who they're missing. But who knows? That character might show up later the way it's set up. I don't want to say too much because it's a brand new series. I don't want to be doing the spoiler some. Reading-wise, first off, if you get to your comic book store, they have a free Marvel Universe magazine. A type that either goes up or down in value depending on what appears. But what's fun is they talk about Avengers 1. They give you a little sneak peek of Captain America 1. They talk about Fantastic Four coming up. Talk about some of the collected editions. There's some house ads for some of the other books. Some of them I'm kind of like, no, why didn't you give me more about Amazing Spider-Man 1 instead of an interview? But this is the type of thing that you definitely want to get because they're apparently getting rid of all the legacy numbering and starting out with number ones. And this is a great way to, especially if you're not going to buy previews or pick up the Marvel thing, to kind of get your feet wet and see if any of these books are interesting. And some of them just by kind of just looking at it, like The Life of Captain Marvel number one, they just show some of the art and some of the covers, and I'm like, I might have to pick up that. Even the Hulk one looks, the Immortal Hulk is, I don't know, it's looking creepy. I might have to give that a try. As far as actual comics read, my daughter came up to me and last Wednesday said, let's go to the source. Okay. So I got there and I decided, since I got a lot of stuff coming in box day, but I did pick me up an Action Comics 100 because I wanted to read it.
100? Wow, that's a back issue. That costs a lot of money.
Oh, wow, there's a piece of dirt on it. 1,000.
Oh,
wow.
Okay.
Oh, and here I was all excited. I thought it said 1918, but no, it's 2018. I enjoyed this. I like the short stories. It gives a chance to see some of the artists shine. You get a good Dan Juergens story. There was a really cool one where they took, I think, pencils from Kurt Swan and had Marv Wolfman script it. I don't know if this was something that was never published or just they pulled out of the woodworks. There was a couple other interesting ones. I'm just kind of flipping through it. Let's see if I can find it. Nope, that wasn't it. Oh, Golden Age Superman talking to, I would imagine, the gentleman who happened to be in that unlucky car that he held over his head in Action Comics number one cover. Just little things like that. I just enjoyed it. The Brian Michael Bendis story that had Jim Lee pencils, it's a teaser. I was a little disappointed. I was hoping for a done in one, but it kind of is, you know, to be revealed in Man of Steel. So, you know, that's coming in just a couple weeks. 1 week, I guess. No, about a month from now, I guess, as the podcast drops. So that I was a little disappointed in. Just get a little taste, but not enough to make me go, oh, I am so excited for this. But the Action Comics one was fantastic. The only thing they could have done that would have been cooler is had they actually put all the variant covers on the back. Or somewhere, just enjoy it. Because I have the Dan Juergens one coming on Box Day. I picked the Steve Rude one up, 1930s variant cover. If the book wasn't $7.99 a pop, I would probably pick up some other ones just for the art on the cover because it was a lot of fun. You know I love me, the omnibuses. Close behind is the complete editions. And I found I have the complete editions of Terry Moore's Echo. And I was able to read the entire thing over the course of a week. It was a very exciting story, really cool. The gist of the story is that a woman's out taking pictures when suddenly an explosion happens above her, and all these little tiny pebble things come and land on her. And they suddenly attack her, and she wakes up and discovers she has this immovable breastplate of this metal on her body. And that's the first issue. And it goes on from there to figure out where it's going. It kind of crosses between science fiction and adventure. It does tie into the Strangers in Paradise universe. I'm a little disappointing in the ending of it because it's one of these things that there's a lot of things in the air. There's a lot of people involved. I suppose I can say that the good guys do save the day, considering there is a Strangers in Paradise 2 series coming out, and had the world ended, there probably wouldn't be a Strangers in Paradise 2. But it seemed rushed towards the end. It's almost like, okay, I got one issue to finish everything. A lot of open questions, a lot of, had all these players involved. And, of course, this is, government conspiracy and corporate conspiracies, and none of that's really attended to towards the end, at least not to my satisfaction. So I was a little disappointed in the ending, but reading through it, I mean, Terry Moore, I love his art. It was just very exciting. Speaking of exciting and really wild, I dug up, because I haven't read it in a long time, Earth X. And when Earth X is really, what would you say, Corey? Kind of like a real negative dystopian view of the Marvel Universe?
Yes.
And it was hard reading, but then again, so is Kingdom Come, but it's fun reading. And if you're someone who knows his Marvel minutiae, you'll probably appreciate this more than somebody who doesn't. And you might reject the premise that Alex Ross is giving in Earth-X, but then again, it's Earth-X. It's a potential different universe. And, of course, Earth-X goes into...
It's, Universe X and then Paradise X.
Nope, Universe X.
Oh, Universe X is, yeah, Universe X and then Paradise X.
And that's the freaking, because guess which book is out of print?
That would be the middle one, Universe X.
Nope, those, I don't know, I have those, so I don't, but Paradise X. Volume 1 is available, Volume 2 is not. And to compound the freaking is, I talked about it, I believe they're doing an omnibus of all of them.
Yes.
And I didn't
order... two-volume omnibus.
And I decided not to order it because I thought, well, I'll just pick up the used ones. There are no used ones to pick up. I have plenty of number ones, none of volume two to be found, except there are a few guys that are selling the whole run for like hundreds of bucks. So I may have to give a call to discount and say, hey, I know it's late. Can you put me on one of these Omnibuy? And then I'll sell Earth X and Universe X on the eBays, or maybe I'll just drag them to the Falcon. So I was a little bummed about that. Chris is happy, though. You want a freaking or a geeking from Chris?
Sure.
Okay, what starts out as a freaking is apparently the bottom of our bathroom sink, the trap.
It's a trap.
It's not anymore. It's a leak. And one thing, if you remember anything about plumbing, is that you need the trap there because it gets water in it and it keeps sewer gas from coming up and getting into your room, be it your laundry room or your bathroom or your kitchen or wherever the water is, because the gas doesn't go through the water. Well, if the trap's gone, the gas can now, if there's any, can come up into the sink. Fortunately, because of the cool weather we've been having, it hasn't really, you know, percolated up. But where the geeking comes in is I spent most of the afternoon, which is why I'm so freaking achy. It only took about four trips back and forth to the plumbing store, and I was able to get the trap and the unfortunately, when I was trying to remove it from the kitchen sink, all the pipes just kind of shredded, and they're metal, and you're thinking, what the? Okay, yeah, this house is from the late 20s, and probably nothing's been done on these pipes in at least mid-80s when we bought the damn thing. So I replaced the pipes. It ran me a whole job other than four trips, hour and a half, about $20. So what was really freaking me, though, and if there is a God, I'm in big-ass trouble, because I think I invented about 20 different swear words as I was trying to put this shit together, because the pipes are about a quarter inch shorter than they are. In other words, you buy the stuff at the plumbing store, and it's all pretty. Yeah, it's all standard, should fit. No, the idiot who put this sink in, just like my toilet. I don't know if I ever told the story about trying to replace my toilet, but they're all the wrong size for the room he did. The guy who owned the house ahead of me must have just slapped things together, because we found the weirdest shit in the electrical. We found weirdest things in the plumbing, and it just creates a freaking headache. I don't know if I went through the whole $700 storyline of me trying to fix my bathtub. So for me to spend $20 and finally be able to fix this and fix it so it's not going to leak is actually quite an accomplishment. So I'm putting that down into geeking, not to mention Chris was fairly impressed. So that's pretty much all I've been doing. Corey, what you be geeking on?
First thing I am geeking on, Joe, you know, we just had the WrestleMania, right?
I does.
Have you watched it yet?
No, I did read up on it, so I do know what happened.
Well, guess what? There's a sequel this Friday.
Ooh.
They're calling it the Greatest Royal Rumble. What it is, WWE has signed this multi-year deal with Saudi Arabia that they will be putting on super shows in Saudi Arabia, which is kind of a big deal because, you know, Saudi Arabia didn't allow movie theaters, and now they're having movie theaters. The new king is kind of opening up to outside entertainment. They're going to have movie theaters, and the WWE is coming there, and they're going to fill a stadium. And I don't even want to get into all the details of the deal. If you want that, go over to pwinsider.com. But this is a very big deal for WWE, so they are having the Greatest Royal Rumble. It'll be a Royal Rumble with 50 participants. You're getting Triple H versus John Cena. You're getting a rematch of Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar in a steel cage. You're getting all sorts of, you know, huge matches. None of the women have matches, by the way. They're not going.
No, not in Saudi Arabia.
Nope, but it starts at like 10 in the afternoon on Friday and goes, you know, probably for like, I don't know, 5-6 hours. But I'll be at work, but it does mean that I have my Sunday off. I can sit down at around noon and just, take the entire afternoon and watch this big old wrestling show. And the Royal Rumble is always my favorite match of the year. And this year I won't have to type up what's happening like I did at the other Royal Rumble. So I'm excited about that. I like that WWE is putting more of these special events on the network. You're $9.99 a month, man. Comic-wise, I am all caught up on Dan Slott's Spider-Man as he's building to issue 800. And this story is phenomenal. For the longest time, you know, you and I have talked about when Norman Osborn shows up, Spider-Man should just want to beat the piss out of him.
Yeah.
I'm still not going to say that it's worth it to bring Norman Osborn back because I think it was one of the dumbest things Marvel ever did. Dumber than One More Day. Bringing Norman Osborn back was a terrible idea. But since they did it, this is the best Norman Osborn story since the Dark Reign. Norman Osborn is a crazy, angry villain, much like he was during the 60s. And I'm loving this story. During Marvel's 99-cent sale, I picked up the digital version of the Avengers Defenders War. So I have been reading that on my Kindle. And this was Steve Englehart kind of, you know, doing whatever he felt like. And the build-up to the Avengers Defenders War is so much fun. There's so much soap opera stuff going on. And the war itself, you know, the plot is very standard. I think every superhero where, you know, teams fight each other, there's a MacGuffin that's split into a bunch of parts, and the different teams have to go find all the parts. But this is kind of the first story where that happened, so you can kind of forgive it. But it's just an excuse for Thor to fight the Hulk. You know, it's just an excuse for heroes to fight each other. And this was before I was reading comics. But reading this, I'm 12 years old again going, oh, wow, Thor and Hulk are going to punch the shit out of each other. This is going to be great. And then the last thing I am geeking on, there are rumors floating. Rumors, Joe. And after hearing some of these rumors, DC, you've been listening to our podcast again, stealing ideas from us. Because remember how we talked about dream teams?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember who I said should take over Green Lantern?
Yes.
Grant Morrison is rumored to be taking over Green Lantern. Bastards are stealing our ideas again.
Yeah, yeah. We wouldn't mind if you just throw a couple preview copies our way, because you know we do that too.
We're not asking for much. We just want to wet our beak a little. Just, you know, put us on the press mailing list. Throw us an interview or two. Just let us wet our beak a little. You know, we're giving you this stuff for free. Just, you know, worst comes to worst, switch DC's hosting over to dreamhost.com. Let us wet our beak a little, man. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books and superhero movies for an hour and a half.
And we could have been at the Infinity War premiere red carpet, which is going on even as we do this podcast. But by the time you listen to it, it would have been a week ago.
We were invited?
No, but we could have gone.
I read Jim Starlin, who 3 hours beforehand was standing in his hotel room in his underwear, talking about how weird it was that, you know, he's standing in his hotel room in his underwear, and in 3 hours, he's going to see all his ideas up on a big screen.
Sweet.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
Don't let anyone ever make you feel like you don't deserve what you want. Hit my music. Funk is on a roll.
Somebody call my mama.
Done, bitches!